Good afternoon and welcome to the briefing. My name is Gordon Kluge and I'm a partner in Seattle, Washington with the office of Smith, Fried & Eberhard. Today is May 26th and our Washington legal alert for today is entitled, Don't Just Wish That Your Evidence Will Speak For Itself. Washington Court of Appeals dismisses the need to reweigh the value of substantial evidence. Now, before we get into the legal alert today, we just want to thank you for tuning in. And if you have any questions on your claims or any topics for future podcasts, please do not hesitate to reach out to us. Let's go ahead and get started today on today's topic, which is commercial liability defense and construction development. Now, our legal alert today, it comes from the Washington Court of Appeals, a decision that was handed down just earlier this month, May 5. It's the case of McClure & Sons versus the State of Washington Department of Labor and Industries. Now, what this case is about is safety regulations and whether an employer is should be cited for various safety regulations. So before I get into the actual nuts and bolts of the case, I'd like to kind of give a little bit of a background in terms of what are safety regulations, how do they come into be, and why do I care, quite frankly? Now, the federal government in 1973 issued what's called the Occupational and Safety Health Act, that or OSHA. That is a series of federal regulations governing safe work environments. And the intent and purpose of OSHA is to make sure that there are a safe work area for employees and also for non-employees. So as to either minimize or to prevent serious injury or death. Now, OSHA does allow for states to enact their own safety regulations with one caveat, and that is the state's regulations have to be as onerous or more so than the federal requirements under OSHA. And Washington State is one of the few states, I believe there's only two or three in our country, that have enacted their own set of safety regulations. And Washington in 1973 created the Washington Industrial Safety and Health Act. Now under WSHA, the Department of Labor and Industries, the agency that would administer workers' compensation claims, they also are in charge of administering and ensuring that the safety regulations are being followed by employers. So they hire a number of their own safety inspectors. And what these safety inspectors do is they go on to various job sites, whether it be a construction site or say a 7-Eleven store or even a law firm or an insurance company, and conducts inspections to see if there are any violations of safety and health regulations. Now in the McClure & Sons case, it just so happened that a WSHA inspector was traveling down the road past a job site that McClure & Sons was working at. Now at this job site, McClure & Sons had this huge tower crane. Some of you may have seen these cranes in larger cities that are erected. They can be several hundred feet high, and I've seen some cranes that are 1,000 feet high or more. And they have a long, narrow body with a boom that extends out several hundred feet horizontally. So on this particular job site, a safety inspector saw a tower crane that was operating relatively close to high power voltage electrical lines. And he decided to pull over and do a surprise inspection. He then went to the job site, asked the McClure & Sons foreman whether he can do an inspection without having to get a warrant, and the foreman agreed. The inspector then performed his own inspection and then found, to McClure & Sons' surprise, five different violations of the safety regulations. Now, these five different violations, when you kind of look at them, some of them are a little ticky-tacky, but others were a little bit more serious. And what the Department of Labor and Industries does with the safety violations is they classify them as either serious or non-serious offenses. And for serious offenses, they usually carry a higher penalty. Non-serious offenses, depending on the type of offense, they could include just a warning. So in this particular case, the department investigator found five different safety violations, classified a couple of them as non-serious, but the majority of them they found were actually serious. And in the end, the inspector, McLaurin Sons, $9,100 for these five different violations. Now, these five violations, just generally speaking, kind of fall into these groups. One, there is a regulation that requires that tower cranes or any sort of construction equipment cannot operate any closer than 20 feet of high power voltage lines. And in this case, the inspector found that the crane that was being used came within that 20 foot exclusionary zone. So they cited McLaurin Sons for that. Safety regulations also would require that in this situation, McClure create what's called a safety zone and actually mark it out with either cones or a flag or construction tape. And in this particular case, the inspector found that there wasn't any sort of exclusionary zone to mark where the construction site crane was located and its relationship to the power lines. The third violation that the inspector found was that McLaurin Sons did not have an independent employee whose only job was to make sure that the boom on this tower crane did not encroach or come within 20 feet of the power lines. There was a employee who was on site, and apparently that employee's sole job was to just make sure that the crane wouldn't tip over. He wasn't really looking to make sure that the boom of the tower crane came close to the power line. And then the last citation that the department found was that McLaurin Sons did not have an accident prevention program. And I see this quite often in construction, in WSHA cases, as well as in construction liability cases where there is a personal injury involved, where the general contractor does not have a tailor-made accident prevention program that's not only tailored to the industry, but also is tailored to the specific job site. And in this case, McLaurin Sons produced some regulations they printed off the internet, and they gave those pieces of paper to their employees, and they called that their accident prevention program. And the inspector said, well, that's not adequate. That doesn't meet the spirit and intent of the Industrial Safety and Health Act. And keeping in mind that the intent of WSHA is to make sure that there's a safe work environment for employees and that it minimizes serious injury or death. And just producing printout of technical safety regulations and giving them to employees didn't meet the spirit or intent of WSHA. So after receiving their $9,100 fine, McLaurin Sons then appealed to the Board of Industrial Insurance Appeals. Now, the Board of Industrial Insurance Appeals, their job is to just review decisions of the Department of Labor and Industries and to determine whether there is any, if there is substantial evidence to support the WSHA violation. So after a hearing, the industrial appeals judge found that there was substantial evidence to support all five of the violations, and the court, the board then enforced the citation in full. At the hearing, McLaurin Sons' main defense was that the inspector had a bad attitude, that he was rude at the scene, that he apparently didn't introduce himself initially as a safety inspector, and that they felt that he was sneaky. The board judge didn't believe that was relevant and so excluded any testimony regarding the character of the investigator. This kind of falls into the basket of what's called character evidence. Oftentimes with any type of lawsuit, people like to, they feel that they can badmouth, or their best defense is they can say that whoever is casting the blame, whether it's a safety inspector or if it's a plaintiff, or if it's an expert witness, that that person has a bad attitude, or that person doesn't pay their taxes, or that person belongs to one political party or another. Now, it's called character evidence, and courts rarely, if ever, allow character evidence to be admitted into to go before a jury, because that evidence just simply isn't relevant. You know, the only thing, especially in the context of WSHA, is whether there is substantial evidence to support the citation. McLaurin Sons also produced what I would consider to be somewhat lame explanations for why they didn't comply with these safety regulations. Like, for instance, on the regulation regarding creating a safe, a exclusionary zone or a safe, you know, a hazard zone, they pointed to a construction fence, a plastic, basically it was a plastic snow fence that kind of meandered throughout the entire project. And they said, well, we do have a exclusionary a zone that's marked out with construction fencing. The board said, well, this construction fencing was oftentimes found laying on the ground, crumpled up, sections of it were missing, and that the fencing itself kind of meandered through the entire job site. It didn't create a specific and visible exclusionary zone around the tower crane and around the power lines. And that's what's required in order to meet the spirit and intent of WSHA. Another kind of lame excuse that McLaurin Sons gave for why they didn't have a spotter was they pointed to another employee, Joe. They said, Joe was our spotter, but during questioning, Joe testified that his main function was just to make sure that the tower crane itself stayed level and that it didn't look like it was about ready to topple. He also said that he wasn't really looking to make sure that the tower crane came within close proximity of the electrical line, but he said, if somebody had asked me to do that, sure, I would have done that. And what the board and the Department of Labor and Industries concluded was that, hey, that's not complying with the spirit and intent of WSHA. One thing to kind of keep in mind with violations of WSHA is it's, if you're arguing, I guess what you can call equity or that, hey, I complied with 90% of the violation, that's oftentimes not enough. It's kind of similar to if you are coming up to a intersection, you see a stop sign, and instead of coming to a stop, you do what's called a California stop. You slow down, you look both ways, and then you just kind of accelerate, but you never come to a complete stop. Well, technically you violated the law that requires you to come to a full and complete stop before a stop sign. If a police officer were nearby, he or she could cite you for not coming to a stop, even if you slowed down, or even if there was no other traffic in the vicinity. The only thing that mattered is, did you comply with the law? Did you bring your vehicle to a complete stop? And that's what we see with safety violations and safety regulations, is saying that you comply with 90% of the law, or that you had something that might have served the purpose of a construction fence, that's not enough. What is enough, what is required, is whether you complied with the statute, period, full stop. It doesn't matter if you have the best excuse in the world. The only thing the Department of Labor and Industries or any court is going to look at is, did you comply with the statute or the regulation? If you didn't, that's where the process of the appeal ends. They don't look at the character evidence of the inspector. They don't look at these excuses of, we have this construction fence that was kind of laying on the ground, or this spotter who would have been available to tell people if tower crane was coming within close proximity. That's just not enough. Also on the accident prevention program, just producing computer printouts of safety regulations doesn't comply with the intent of creating an accident prevention program that's tailored to the job site and specific to the industry. So one of the takeaways on this is that when you're looking at WSHA cases and WSHA violations, you just look at whether there is evidence to support you complied with the regulation or not. It doesn't, if you start meandering into character evidence, you start going into arguments that, well, I complied with 90% of the regulation, that is just not enough. So the board, they ended up enforcing the citation in full, and then McLaurin Sons decided that they wanted to continue appealing. So they appealed the same decision to Snohomish County Superior Court. And again, the Snohomish County Superior Court looked to see if there was substantial evidence to support the department's citation. And once again, they agreed with the board and they said, yes, there was substantial evidence. So they affirmed the Department of Labor and Industry citations. McLaurin Sons then appealed a third time, this time to the Court of Appeals, which is the subject of today's legal alert. And yet again, the Court of Appeals did the exact same analysis that was done at the board level and said, yes, there was substantial evidence to support the citations by the Department of Labor and Industries. Now, one of the things that as you are appealing to higher and higher courts, it is much more difficult to try to reverse a decision of an agency if you weren't successful lower on one of your first initial appeals. So courts oftentimes will defer to agencies' interpretation and enforcement of their own regulations because that is why the agency is created. In this case, the Department of Labor and Industries, one of their functions is to just enforce safety regulations. That's all they do. And courts oftentimes will defer to the department about their interpretation of regulation, as long as it complies with the underlying statute, or their enforcement of the regulation. So as you go up on the appeal process, the courts start deferring more to the Department of Labor and Industries and the Board of Industrial Insurance Appeals. And then that's what we saw with the Superior Court and the Court of Appeals decisions, was that they did defer to the department's findings, and they started imposing upon the McClure and Suds the obligation that they had to look at the evidence in the light most favorable to the department, not to McClure and Sons, but to the department. And so the court started looking at, I guess, coming to the appeal with the idea in mind that we're going to look at all the evidence in the light most favorable to the Department of Labor and Industries. And the duty is now on the McClure and Sons to overcome that presumption. And that is another one of these key takeaways we saw with this appeal, is that it makes it much more difficult the higher up you go with your appeals. Hopefully McClure and Sons realizes that, you know, they're kind of fighting an uphill battle at this point. They may have had a good reason and a rational reason to appeal a $9,100 citation, but if they were to appeal to the Supreme Court, I think that we would probably see the exact same decision that we've seen at the Board of Industrial Insurance Appeals, this Snohomish County Superior Court, and then now at the Court of Appeals. The other big takeaway with this case is kind of knowing when to cut your losses. McClure and Sons, like I said, probably had a good, valid reason to do the initial set of appeals. You know, they're faced with a $9,100 fine, and they feel that they were unjustly cited for these safety violations. They should have taken a more, you know, objective view of whether they complied with the regulations or not. If their main defense is to badmouth an inspector or to say that we complied with 90% of the regulation, that's not a recipe for a successful appeal. That is a recipe for just wasting your money. And so after the first appeal, you know, McClure and Sons more than likely ended up having to pay for lawyers to do the Superior Court and then also the Court of Appeals decisions. In the end, McClure and Sons more than likely spent more than $9,100 for legal costs, for attorney fees to represent them. And in the end, not only do they have these have to pay their lawyers, but they also have to still pay the $9,100 citation. So, you know, the other big takeaway with this case is to know when to cut your losses. You know, sometimes you just keep banging your head against the wall and expect different results. You end up wasting a lot of your own time and money on defenses that are just going nowhere. So that does it for today's podcast on The Briefing. I want to thank you so much for joining us today. If you have any questions or any ideas of future legal alerts, please feel free to reach out to us at sfe@smithfried.com. We're here to assist you in any way. We can answer any of your questions you have for your claims, or if you have just general questions about Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and Alaska, as well as California, we're here to provide that assistance to you as best as we can. We have a large number of attorneys who have a varied practice area and who are licensed in a number of different states, and if any one lawyer isn't able to answer your question, more than likely we have somebody who can. So my name is Gordon Klug. I'd appreciate your time today and want to thank you for joining me, and have a great rest of the week.